The Wicked Wednesday has begun. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morenci, the pitch, the players, the hustlers, the podcasters, the people of Bustem, and everybody else in between. Let's do this thing as we continue to go through World Series withdrawals right now, as it was just such an awesome baseball playoffs. I just want more right now, and it's funny because we got college basketball, we got NFL football, CFL football, MLS playoffs, and I found myself last night at about 2 in the morning looking at the Major League Baseball free agency board and the top players that are available. And let me tell you, it's actually pretty, not a bad free agent list this year. There's actually some players that can really help baseball teams. And you know, we got the WBC, the World Baseball Classic, will be here before we know it. And if you think about it, it's actually very cool. You know, because like I said, it was like such a big letdown after this. Like, all right, yeah, college basketball is back and stuff, but it was just such an intense World Series and great baseball playoffs, and we want more. But the WBC is around the corner, and it's easy to forget, but it's an Olympic year right now. And, you know, the Olympic hockey talk will definitely start to pick up soon. But, man, we've got the World Baseball Classic and the Olympics around the corner, just a couple of months away. And oh yeah, the World Cup of Soccer is coming this summer as well. Let's bring in Ian Cameron, aka Babano, Cam Stewart in the house with us. Babano, you're a big hockey guy, and you notice in the NHL right now the season and the schedule is so condensed, and teams are playing so many games in a short amount of time of the season right now, due to the Olympic break that we have right now, right? I mean, the Vancouver Canucks, Babano, have already played games in 9 different time zones this year. Season's been going on for like 2 weeks, bro. That's ridiculous. But it's because of the Olympics. The NHL season is like very condensed this year.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And it's because of the 2-week break that's going to happen, as you mentioned, during the Winter Olympic Hockey Tournament. The NHL is trying to cram in 82 games in every possible date they can for all 32 teams. And as a result, there's some crazy scheduling dynamics. There's been teams that have played 5 or 6 straight on the road. They come back home for one game and then they go on the road again. This has happened countless times already this year. And I don't get it. I mean, to schedule things that, you know, rough for particular teams, but it's all part of the process of having to get these games completed. They could have moved up the start of the season, which they're actually going to do starting next year, where the regular season's going to end begin, you know, right at the end of September, but probably should have done that this year. You would have at least been given yourself a little bit more time as far as getting these games in. But yeah, it is condensed schedules, and you got to be aware of these 3 games in 4 nights, 5 games in 8 nights. I've seen 7 games in 10 nights, even on a couple of occasions for certain teams. So these are scheduling dynamics that, especially later in the year, guys, because early in the year, you can kind of better handle them. You're not quite, you know, rattled with injuries, and the grind of the season hasn't totally gotten there yet for you. But later in the season, when we get these kind of 5 games in 8 nights, 7 games in 10 night scheduling spots, that's when it's the wear and tear of it's really going to start to show up.
The Vancouver Canucks have really, they were a classic example of facing just an absolute brutal start to the season. But you're right, Babano. If they could survive this, like if they could just keep their head above water coming back out of the Olympics after, it's a very home-friendly schedule down the stretch for them. But the question is, will it bury them before they actually get there? But I can't wait to see how this I can't wait to see how the Olympics play out. We saw how exciting the Four Nations were. The only letdown to me for the Olympics and the hockey is that Russia aren't in it. And it's hard to have a hockey tournament and claim it's best on best if Russia's not there, right? There's an asterisk next to it. Let's just call it out for what it is. It's true. And it doesn't take anything away from, you know what I mean, asterisk at all. You know, you're not a real champion, but it does take away from a hockey tournament. Right. I mean, if we're talking about, oh, Russia's not playing in the World Baseball Classic, nobody cares. But, you know, they're actually pretty good at hockey. So it is disappointing. I don't agree with, like, you know, you want to get into the political type stuff. But my deal with that is if you start banning every country that does something geopolitically that people don't like, we're not going to have an Olympics. right? I mean, you kind of got to separate it. I know it's strange, but where does it stop, right? And you'll notice the Western countries, i.e. us, like the Western world, we ban everybody, but we'll never ban ourselves. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, yeah, well, no, we did that. When we do this, is because we're justified. No, it's because of that. That's why. No, but they're evil. They did that because they're evil and they're bad, but we're not going to be bad, right? Like, so it's sort of this, really? You want to start living in a glass house type of deal? We saw this in the 80s. In 1980 and 1984, and countries started saying, you know what, I'm not going to show up because of this. And it really doesn't help anybody, including countries' own athletes. I would put the Russian team in, but I would put them in just under a different name type of deal. Like, that's what they do in some other sports, right? They'll say, all right, Russian, you know, the Russians can participate. Like, Sabalenka is a good example. Like, when you watch tennis, they don't put a Russian flag next to her name like they do. Like, they'll say, like, oh, other, you know what I mean? Like, Coco Gauff, America, whatnot. Like, Sabalenka, it doesn't say where she's from. It just says Sabalenka, right? Because they don't want to give, they don't want to give Russia love for that, which, all right, fine. It doesn't really change anything, but I don't have a problem with that. Like, that's what they should do in the Olympics. Let Russia play, call them whatever, and, like, you know, the hockey team, let their athletes play under the, you know, the participation of the Olympic banner for, like, the countryless athletes, because you're bastardizing the event, in my opinion, by not, and not just hockey, by all these Russians. Like, but I don't know. I think some Russians might be in the Olympics. I just know the hockey team is banned. And I'm looking at the dates here, and they're shutting down for a while. That's why the NHL owners are never a fan of this. But I can't wait for the Olympics. Can't wait for the WBC. Just love international events, and love the CFL playoffs as well. So, what's the weather going to be, Babano, this weekend in Hamilton?
Looks fine. It looks like it's going to be not that cold for this time of year, early November. Not much wind, 30% chance of precipitation, which isn't very much. So I don't think we're going to have many weather issues for a game that, at least what I see, could have a lot of points in it, and two great quarterbacks with old Levi Mitchell, who's had a great season, and Davis Alexander, who is 12-0 now as a CFL starter.
Yeah, Davis Alexander set an all-time CFL record to start his career, 11-0 in the regular season, 12-0 now, including the playoffs. So he wants 14-0, right? He wants to run the table and start his career off 14-0. And you could not have possibly scripted it any better for Davis Alexander. A lot of talk about Davis Alexander, but one thing about the Montreal Alouettes is they're very, very, opportunistic on defense, right? I guess both teams are.
They
right?
give up Battle. Yards. They give up yards. They give up big plays, but boy, they punch the ball out. They're
well,
ball
the
hawks.
Thing.
They've
created 17 forced turnovers this year by the Montreal Alouettes. So they've caused 17 fumbles on the season. But the Hamilton Tiger Cats ball hawking secondary, 27 interceptions on the season for
That's
the
amazing.
Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Yep. They've got a bunch of them. They've got, obviously, Jamal Peters, veteran cornerback. He's been great. Reggie Stubblefield, a former Montreal Alouette, now with the Ticat, has been a great addition to that secondary. And, of course, Stavros Katsantonis, great all-Canadian safety, played his university football at UBC. He's been tremendous, not just good, tremendous in terms of forcing turnovers and just reading the quarterback. Yeah, there's definitely players on this Ticats team that are going to be able to cover and make life difficult for Mac and Philpott and Speaker, a lot of these great Alouettes receivers. That's one of the big-time matchups, I think, in the game within the game for this East Final. How do the Ticats secondary, how does it deal with this very dynamic passing game and this array of very talented, deep receivers here? They got tons of depth in that receiving core, Montreal. We'll see how Hamilton matches up against it.
Turnovers will be key in this football game. I trust Montreal to turn the ball over less than Hamilton. Listen, Hamilton have been throwing, and this is pretty wild, that Hamilton averaged 376 passing yards a game. Like, so it's a lethal aerial attack. But we've seen as the season has gone on, it's easier to throw for 376 yards a game in the middle of the summer and stuff than it is when you get into a playoff game. But Montreal is Babano State. Montreal are giving up 256.9 passing yards a game. I think that's a little deceptive in the sense that it's not like, oh, they have secondary concerns. It's more so that they were leading in most of the football games that they were playing in often, and or they were beaten down by injuries, right, where they had a month where they just really weren't themselves, right? They just sort of got their ass handed to them for a month, and then they got healthy again after the fact. But the stakes are high. Trip to the Great Cup on the line. I'll tell you what, everybody is picking Montreal. Nope, I haven't heard one person, not one person, pick the Hamilton Tiger Cats to advance and win this football game, Babano. Are you going to be that person?
Even this Ticat fan and season ticket holder isn't picking the Ticats here in this game. That's the crazy part. So you're,
which is
right
wild because
that.
It's not like it's all, oh, it's a 12-point spread.
It's 2.5.
It's a toss-up game, but yes. Nobody thinks Hamilton are going to win. Like, if I was Hamilton, I would know this too.
Yeah,
I'd be like, yeah, you know what?
Oh,
you
I'd use
those guys on TSN.
Yeah.
Like, they all think Montreal is going to win. Everybody's saying Montreal versus Saskatchewan.
They've made Montreal a road favorite in our stadium. Yeah, we got to bring that up. Yeah.
People don't believe in Bo Levi Mitchell, Cam.
That's what it is. And the thing is, he can play well, but he's also prone to mistakes. You guys said it the best. Montreal's defense, they'll give up chunks, but they'll also make huge plays when they need to. They absolutely punch out the ball. They pick off the ball. That's the whole thing. That's the key. I love Davis Alexander, Gabe, and his attitude. But hey, you're right. Like, you're looking at a spread of 2.5. Like, it's not like Montreal -9 on the road or anything like this. It's essentially almost a pick 'em. Montreal is under $1.50 on the money line, and you're telling me nobody likes Hamilton? I still like Montreal in the game, but I'm surprised Tiger Cat fan, you, Babano, is taking Montreal. I thought you'd take Hamilton.
Well, here's why. And I as a fan, I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to see them be in the Grey Cup in Winnipeg next week and prove that they can beat a quality upper echelon team with their top quarterback playing. But here's... look at that Hamilton season schedule, and you really do your digging and research into every single win. Look at the wins that got us the East Division Championship. That's what I'm concerned about. There was a lot of Torontos that we beat, Ottawas that we beat, Edmontons that we beat, and then there were games against Montreal. When we went 2-0 against Montreal, we faced McLeod Bethel-Thompson in one of the games, James Morgan in the other game. So two backup quarterbacks for Montreal when we swept the season series. That's what won us the division. We beat Montreal when Davis Alexander was unavailable, and we faced them with MBT and James Morgan. When we split the season series with Winnipeg, we beat them with Chris Streveler at quarterback, and he was horrible in that game here in Hamilton. And then when we went out there to Winnipeg and we played the Bombers with a healthy Zach Collaros, we got our asses handed to us, 40-3, you know, in that game. We got swept by Saskatchewan, the team that won the West Division this year. We got swept by Calgary against the Stampeders, another team that made the playoffs. So that's my point, guys. I think we've got a good offense. I've got questions about certainly our pass rush and against this kind of a quarterback and Alexander who can make things happen escaping the pocket. But when I look at Hamilton's wins and body of work this year, a lot of it was against Toronto, a lot of it was against Ottawa, a lot of it was against Edmonton, and all the wins for the most part against the playoff-bound teams in the CFL were backup quarterbacks or advantageous situations for the Ticats. That's why it's hard to read into them being the absolute best of the best team in the East Division over Montreal, because I feel when fully healthy, Montreal just might have a better roster. We'll see on Saturday.
We've got some great matchups on Saturday in the CFL, including BC and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. The BC Lions are riding a 7-game win streak right now on the backs of a very potent offense that is averaging over 30 points a game this year, 31.1 points per game. To be exact, yeah, you look at the Rough Riders, this is offense versus defense, right? This is sort of flash versus, you know, sizzle versus steak in a sense. So, you know, BC are flashy. They put up 31 points a game. The Rough Riders only give up 22 points a game, which is really impressive when you consider this is the CFL, that's such an offensive-minded league. So they only give up 22.7 points per game due to the fact that they have the ball all the time. The Rough Riders really believe in ball possession, and they control the clock, man. They average 31.47 minutes of time possession per football game. So they like to wear down their opponent with their rushing attack, work in some play action with Trevor Harris. This is going to be a great football game, Babano. They played each other in the final regular season game of the year, and BC needed the game to host a playoff game, and they had a hard time finishing the Riders off. The Riders did start their starters in the first half, started to shut it down a bit as the game went on, but this is a big rivalry between these two teams. What do you think about this game? Rough Riders are 3.5-point favorites.
This one is this one's tough. This one's really tough because Saskatchewan's got a great home field. I think the rest has done them a lot as far as they had some injuries in the secondary. They had Dante Myers and Keyshawn Johnson and some of their receivers that were banged up. And Corey Mace was saying early in the week he expects there's a good chance they're back. So this is going to be a fully healthy and rested squad taking on the BC Lions here.
Let me just say something about their home field, though. It is strange. The game isn't sold out or anything. There's still a lot of tickets available this week.
Really?
Yeah, you know, Rider fans got angry. Like, their attendance has gone down over the last couple of years.
Wow.
But I don't understand is that they're actually good now. So, like,
yeah,
they had, like, before it just used to be automatic, right? But it really isn't. Yeah, like, I was seeing, like, Rough Rider media were like, what's wrong with you people? Like, they're good. Like, what's your problem now? What are you complaining about? Like, right? Like, yeah, I just got to bring that up. I'm not saying it's still not a very difficult place to play, and I'm not saying it's still not loud in there, but it's not quite as crazy as it used to be a couple of years ago.
No, you're right about that. There's no question. I want to point out something. Remember the first time BC played Saskatchewan? Because you want to look back at head-to-head this time of year when you're talking playoffs and see what happened. The 37-18 win for Saskatchewan here in Saskatchewan against BC on June 28th has to be taken with a grain of salt. Nathan Rourke didn't play in that game. That was a Jeremiah Masoli start for the BC Lions that day. You look at the other two meetings against Saskatchewan, it was 33-27 for Saskatchewan in BC. Rourke did play, obviously, in that game. And then, of course, you got the final game of the season, which was the 27-21 victory for the BC Lions at Saskatchewan. But the two Rourke starts, they scored 27 points. And when you look at this BC offense, look, Milligan, and there's a bunch of great players in that secondary.
Milligan was hurt, though, Babano, too. Yep. Another thing is all these guys, Gabe, are coming back, and they're practicing, yes, but they were out three games. Milligan, Myers, the receiver. So a lot of these guys, sure, they're practicing for Saskatchewan, but at the end of the year, they were banged up. So it's a situation where, sure, they're coming back, but who knows how healthy these guys are going to be. So that's why I give the Lions a big chance in this game, guys.
Well, Cam, here's the bet that I like with BC here. The 3.5, sure. If you want to lean that way, could it be a field goal game? Yes. I worry about the BC defense still. You know, Vernon Adams and Calgary were moving the ball pretty well for periods of that game last week. You know, Trevor Harris is going to rest for an old, you've talked about this in the past with, you know, Drew Brees and Tom Brady in the NFL, where when you're an older quarterback and you get that extra time off and that rest, it's almost like it's just such a benefit for your arm. You know, you got a little more zip, a little more just, you know, explosion in that throwing motion. And I could see that being the case here for Trevor Harris with the rest. So I see Saskatchewan scoring points, but I can't turn down, guys, the opportunity to take a BC Lions team total over 23.5, because that's where the number is right now. For a BC Lions team that scored 33 in the win against Calgary in the division semis, in the regular season, here's what they put up: 27, 37, 38, 27, 52, 38, 33, 34, 36, 41, 33, 27. This is going all the way back to July with these point outputs that the BC Lions have had. So you're going to put out there the 23.5 for this BC Lions team total when they've basically gotten over that number almost every single game going back to, you know, early to mid-July. It's hard to turn that down. And I think that's the bet that I've really locked in on the most in this West Final, taking that BC team total over 23.5.
I like the bet a lot. Good number right there. But I'm just going to, in my own opinion, I'll throw it out there for everybody. I'm not sure this is going to be like a all-out track meet game, right? Like, BC have to play defense to win. They're going to have to contain the run a bit. They've gotten better at it. BC's offense has been slow to start often.
Yes.
Like I said, I don't think, you know, I could be wrong. And I'm not betting the under, but I'm just stating, I'm not like, oh, yeah, like, for sure, this is going to be like both teams are
flurries
getting into
and a
the
chance
30s.
Of wind. Some wind in Saskatchewan is the forecast for Sunday, and a chance of flurries as well. It's going to be a lot colder there than it will be in Hamilton.
Yeah, you know what though, I'm not overly concerned about the weather factor. And in fact, I thought about that yesterday. Like yesterday in Vancouver, it's cold, man. It's cold. It's damp. It's like raining sideways type of stuff. Today it's a little bit nicer. But my point is the BC Lions practice in an outdoor park, okay, with a bunch of kids, like, type of deal.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have, like, any indoor practice facility, like, type thing. Like, so I actually like it, though. I like it. Like, there's a big thing about, oh, yeah, BC and the weather and stuff. It's like, yeah, all right, you guys, you ever been to a BC, like, a Lion? Like, come out here and see what the weather's like. It's not as nice as people think at this time of the year. Like, so the Lion players are used to practicing in the rain. They're used to playing in the rain. It's always damp and cold. Weather won't be a factor for the BC Lions. Like, they're not going to win or lose the game because of weather on Saturday. Now, I don't know what's the weather in Winnipeg at the Grey Cup in a couple of weeks. That's another story. I'm not sure what the weather there is going to be like. But, all right, so you say team total, Babano. And look, nice, you know, like you said, man, 24 points for a team that averages nearly 32 a game.
I think that's the way to go. I mean, this is, and here's the thing, and they didn't even, here's the scary part. They put up 33 points, and I thought Calgary's defense played okay last week. Because you actually think about it, they got the short fields a couple of times with good kick returns.
But they put 50 up in the regular season on Calgary and stuff. For whatever reason, like, Calgary can't stop the pass, right? It was one of those just sort of matchup deals that they just went up and down the field on them, but can't wait to see how this plays out. And of course, the Grey Cup is in Winnipeg. Yeah, I'm not going to say, listen, I was planning on going. As of now, I'm not. If some sort of, you know, miracle happens and I change my mind. But the problem is, when you put the Grey Cups in these towns like this, is, yeah, it's cool and people like it there, but there's not enough hotels. Like, it's not big enough. Like, at least if it's in Toronto or Vancouver or something, it doesn't affect hotel room prices in the city. It's not like a big deal in the city, basically. Right? Like, it's the biggest deal in Winnipeg. It's the only thing in Winnipeg. Right? Like, you go to a bigger city and it's like, oh, yeah, there's a Grey Cup, but, like, yeah, there's also this and that going on. Like, it doesn't affect hotel room prices. Like, so Winnipeg, they don't have that many hotels to begin with. So you got a couple of nice hotels. They're all booked. It's like $800 for like stupid, like, you know, Motel Sixes and stuff like that in Winnipeg now near the airport. And yeah, it's like, really? Like, you know what I mean?
$800 for a Motel Six.
Yeah, I'm not spending $600 for a Motel Six in Winnipeg, like, and taking an Uber, or like spending $80 on an Uber. Like, you know, to get to the casino or wherever. Like, from what I saw, too, that stadium doesn't look to be downtown, Cam. That Winnipeg Stadium kind of looks like it's in the middle of nowhere. That was my last straw. I was like, screw that, man. I'm not driving around in Winnipeg. That's not happening.
Like, you're right. It's expensive to get around there because everything's spread out. That Fort Garry Hotel, which is like literally they featured on haunted house shows, that's where I stayed when the Jets came back and they played the Canadians when they got reinstated into the NHL. No, you're great, Gabe. You're absolutely right. Like, it's not easy to get around Winnipeg. I've been there a few times, and nothing is all condensed like downtown or anything. It's a big hall.
All the convenient hotels are booked.
Yeah.
By TSN and the teams.
Correct.
Right? So you got TSN, you got the TV crew, you got the league officials and whatever. They all do. So they booked way, like, they know where, like, so everybody else is sort of like, you know. Next year it's in Calgary, and I guess the year after that they're going to Regina. So they're just absolutely screwing the East Coast over, which isn't a surprise. But figure with a new commissioner it would be a little bit more inclusive, but same old garbage with the CFL. Like, that's crazy. It was in Vancouver last year. So you're going to have this, what, the Grey Cup's going to be in like freaking 4 years in a row in the Western Division? Like, you've got it. You know what I mean?
No balance there. I agree. That should be like, more figure balance it out. Than that. Come on.
Yep. Yeah. They don't want to do it in Montreal because of the Olympic Stadium. I don't know. Toronto, they don't own the stadium, right? There's bad blood, whatever. You know what I mean? They don't own the they used to have access to the Rogers Center, Sky Dome or whatnot. Now they like it's Rogers' stadium, right? But they're all kind of owned together now, aren't they? So I don't see that as a problem. Like, I don't know why it's not in Toronto, basically.
Yeah.
Or Montreal, for the record. Just put it in Olympic Stadium. It's indoors. Who cares? Like, whatever. So the seats
I think Montreal's due for a Grey Cup. Overdue.
Way overdue.
Yeah.
Grey Cups are good at Montreal, too. Like, they pack
good party town.
Yeah, like, people, that's it. Visitors, the visiting fan base has a good time in Montreal. And unlike some of these other cities, there's more than one street and one like, hotel and stuff in Montreal. Like, there's a bunch of stuff you could do there. All right, we'll get you out of here, Babano. I know you got to get going here in a couple of minutes. Any college football thoughts before you leave? The first college football playoff rankings came out yesterday. There's nothing really to cry about. A lot of these teams are all playing each other still, so I'm not going to panic about the rankings. But two teams that are, like, grouped basically right next to each other, BYU and Texas Tech, are going head-to-head on Saturday. But Babano, Texas Tech are 10-point favorites in that game.
So the bet I like in that game is the over. I mean, I keep waiting for BYU to kind of show that they're maybe not on par with some teams in this conference, but they keep proving me wrong. I mean, the Utah win was impressive. They went to Iowa State, and that game was close in the first half, and they blew it wide open in the second half. Bear Bachmeyer's playing great. He's got Kingston and Roberts, two great receivers. The defense, you know, has been a bend but don't break for this BYU team. This is going to be a different animal with a healthy Baron Morton leading Texas Tech at quarterback. They can score quickly and they can score often. I leaned to Texas Tech. I was kind of open for it to be a little bit lower than double digits, but
that's crazy. 10.5.
I think at 50, this is a big step up for BYU. I will say that. So I don't really want to get in the way of Texas Tech. It is a lot of points, Cam. I will agree with you on that to lay it with the Red Raiders, but I like the over in that game. I think both teams will do enough offensively. And I'll say this about Texas Tech's defense, as great as it's been, I think BYU can test them and do enough offensively to chip into that over.
Interesting game as well as UCLA. UCLA have not quit on their season, and they upset Penn State. They followed that up with a win against Michigan State. They followed that up with a win against Maryland. Unfortunately for them, then their schedule made them go to Indiana. They got lit up by Indiana, but now they're back on track, going back home, and this is going to be an uphill climb for these guys to get to 6. Yeah, it's going to be tough for them. Right, they're gonna have to go 3-1 in their last 4 games to become bowl eligible. But one thing about the kids on the UCLA Bruins, they do not tap out. And Raiola's out now, Babano, for the Huskers. I think UCLA are gonna beat them. I think UCLA are gonna get to 4-5. I think these kids are hell bent on trying to get to 6 wins.
I would agree with that. I think it's a great spot. Nebraska coming off the hard fought, you know, a tough loss to USC at home last week, losing their starting quarterback, Dylan Raiola. Now, Dana Holgorsen, the offensive coordinator of Nebraska, is just speaking, you know, words of praise to TJ Lateef, who's going to take over at quarterback, saying he's ready for this moment. He'll be fine. Well, we'll see. You know, you still got to make your first official start on the road against a Bruins team that certainly played better football since Deshaun Foster's dismissal. So I agree with you there. UCLA, I think at around a pick 'em is the way I'd go.
And there's a lot of talk, obviously, about the Dodgers in L.A., but a big story going on right now is UCLA might be leaving the Rose Bowl. And I know it almost sounds sacrilegious in a way. You're like, oh, wow, like the beautiful, like, you know, you're playing in the Rose Bowl, but it doesn't work at the Rose Bowl. It doesn't. Like, we can talk about how nice the Rose Bowl is and stuff. The kids from UCLA do not go there. It's nowhere near the campus. Like, the Rose Bowl is not an easy place to get in and out of. It's an inconvenient stadium. It's old school. It's really cool when you're there, but it's very inconvenient. It's nowhere near the UCLA campus, and they don't go. They, you know, like, literally, you have a 110,000-seat stadium, and you've literally got, like, 23,000 people in there, and most of them are from the visiting team because they just want to see the damn Rose Bowl. So there's a story going on right now, and the Rose Bowl is, like, really – they're really unhappy about this. And in fact, they're already suing. So long story short, UCLA are in talks to start playing their home games at SoFi Stadium in Inglewood instead of at the Rose Bowl, which I understand.
I'm not sure that's the answer either, but I guess.
Exactly, Babano. That's my thing. I'm like, okay, you know what? Good idea getting out of the Rose Bowl. I don't have a problem with this. You know, you're UCLA. You've got the effing money. Build a goddamn stadium on your campus, Babano.
Seriously.
Bingo.
Like, you've got the money. Like, you're not Kent State or Akron. You're UCLA.
How on earth do you expect to fill even one-tenth of SoFi Stadium for UCLA?
I'm saying, Babano, you want to go from Rose Bowl to, like, so what's the difference? Now we're downtown. It's like, all right, okay.
They treat
like,
the school
in front
game.
Of 100, yeah, like you said, UCLA, and everybody knows this, knows the program, is saying the same damn thing. They're like, listen, build a freaking stadium that holds like 40,000 people type thing, 45. Yeah. Like, don't go mega. Build a nice little stadium for yourselves. Put it on the campus and move on, man. And you'll draw fans. Like, kids will go because it's on
this
the
is
campus.
Going to be like Tulane when they were bad, when they were playing in the Superdome
for
a while.
Superdome. It doesn't work. Yeah. Like, you know, these NFL stadiums, it doesn't work.
They treat UCLA like they're a program, like a joke, like a new program. They have a legacy. Troy Aikman, like, you know what I mean? Game, like, the players that have played at this school. And it's almost
UCLA
it's
to
insane.
Treat themselves like this.
Yeah,
like,
yes, yes.
They're such a basketball school. Like, listen, if you want to be a football school for real and you really want to, like, there's talk, and dear God, like, I don't think this will happen, but Brian Kelly's name keeps coming up.
Oh, God.
Which he seems like the last guy for LA to me, but I don't know. I didn't think
hard
he would
pass on that one if I'm making
exactly. Pass.
I would hire Jane Franklin if I was them, but I've said this a million
Speaking
times
of Brian
over.
Brian Kelly.
They don't,
I'll
but
throw this
quickly
out
with
at you,
Franklin, turns out UCLA, they don't have the money for him. Like, Franklin wants 11 million. Like, you got to pay him in the $10 million a year range. UCLA don't have that type of money for a coach.
No, I agree. Before I get out of here, guys, speaking of Brian Kelly, I'm going to ask you about this LSU-Bama game. I could, for one game, because, look, Brian Kelly's not the easiest coach to play under, and I'm sure LSU players found that out. Is there a one-game coaching bump for them here? Taking on Alabama. And look, LSU's season's kind of crumbled here. They can't make the playoff. They can't win the conference anymore. But for one game, Alabama, kind of a national championship or Super Bowl of sorts, do they rally
that.
The troops for 1 week enough to hang around getting
because
10 points in that game?
A lot of times, like you look at Penn State, they've kind of crumbled after, right? I know they lost their quarterback, but they liked Franklin. Right. They got recruited. They liked them. They didn't want to see him get fired. They were like, man, we just got our coach fired because we didn't win enough. Right. So they felt bad and were kind of crushed about it. Like you said, Babano, the kids on LSU hated Brian Kelly. Right. So, like, they don't like him. So now that he's gone, they're going to play free. Right. They're going to play free. They're going to be happier. They're going to be in a better mood. I think they actually could be a live dog. My only, and you know, you got to lay double digit points. My only downfall to this is if you, and you know, I know you know this, is like Bama have owned them recently, right? They've beaten them, what, four of the last five times?
They've been really good at Tuscaloosa this year at home. Yep.
Yeah. So, like, it could get away, but yeah, I'm not ready to lay the points. Look, we saw last week with Florida. Florida covered with the new coach against Georgia, too.
Yep. Depends on what they thought of the coach that got fired, you know, and that's really, it's case by case.
Well, sometimes, too, you like the coach and he got fired and you're playing, you're inspired for him, too, right? You're like, oh, we're going to play hard for him. He's not here anymore. Let's win for him. I think the Gator players like Napier, too. It wasn't like, oh, they don't like Napier. That's why he's getting fired. But Kelly's different. Like, I mean, you see that the LSU players' parents are saying, like, oh, yeah, now we can ball now that this guy's gone. Like, they really didn't like him. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think LSU, too, they sort of looking ahead to next year already. Yeah. Of like, you know what? It'll be fine next year. We'll get back on track. But that LSU whole thing is a mess, man. The governor is running everything now. And like, he said the other day, guys, he's running the football program because it's a state institution. So he's taking over control. It's not like he's some big football expert or like even like he complained 2 days ago to McAfee that LSU won't make the BCS bowl playoffs this year. He said, we're not even in the BCS Bowl this year. There are no BCS Bowls. It's there bowls. Haven't been for like 15 years, jackass. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
championship series has been gone for a
so you're running the football program, huh? Like, and your biggest concern is, oh, you want live Tigers on the sideline roaming the field? Like, this is your, this is what, like, even people in Louisiana think he's an idiot. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and like, it's a very red state. Like, even like the Republicans all think he's got to go. Like, he's an idiot because they don't mind him being an idiot politically, but once they he dipped his toes into the football program.
I don't care what political group you stand with. Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like, oh, yeah, you might be a horrible governor, but I don't care because I voted for you and you're on my side.
Yeah.
But, yeah, now that you're touched, now you just caused the football program chaos. Yeah. You're going to get voted
out
of
office. That's a different story.
That's what it's like down there. Football's first. Football before family. football
I like
is
that slogan exactly.
All right, last one, and we'll get you out of here, Ben. I don't know if you got a hockey thought on the way up, but I'm going to tell you guys right now, I'm on Missouri on the win total over 6.5. They've been stuck at 6 because, you know, they lost a close one to Alabama, they lost a close one to Vanderbilt. Both games they could have, should have won, they didn't. It's a learning experience for them. I'm calling it right now. Texas A&M loses for the first time this year. Missouri are going to knock them off. And I'm glad that we're getting 7 here. I thought, you know, I'm surprised almost, Babano, because Missouri, they lost the last two games they played, but they were damn close games, and they were right there in both of them. And the big key here is, guys, Texas A&M can't stop the run. It's like a little, like every good team sort of has like a little thing. Their thing is the run. They're ranked 90th in the country against in rushing expectancy rate. And there's one thing that Missouri does. They run the effing ball over and over and over. They're almost like – it's like Michigan or a military school almost. Like, they rush for 238 yards a game on the ground. They're ranked 7th in the country in rushing yards. And they're right up there. It's basically – this is rushing yards. Navy, Air Force, Utah, Army, Jacksonville State, Indiana, Missouri. And then you got Michigan 10. Like, they pound the rock. And A&M can't stop the rock, Babano. I love the 7 points, but I'm calling the upset special. Missouri will beat Texas A&M, guys. You heard it here first on the podcast.
Well, and it goes, and you said about how well they run the football, and there's been some issues with Texas A&M's run defense. It goes right in hand with the fact they run it a lot. They're 14th in rush attempts, Missouri, and they're only 58th in pass attempts. So, yes, this is definitely an offense that is skewed to running the football. And here's another case where, you know, Nebraska's trying to talk up how good they think their new starting quarterback, TJ Latif, is replacing Raiola. Missouri's saying the same thing about Matt Zollers, who's going to replace an injured Bo Pavula here. They love him. They think he's ready for this. He was the high school coaches for Matt Zollers said,
well, Zollers
great
already
things
played
about him. Yeah.
So he got thrown into the Wolves already, right?
Yes.
Against Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
On the road. And dare I say this, it's often the case, Babano and Cam, where the star quarterback goes out, yet the offense sort of gets better with the new kid. And we see this with Penn State. Drew Aller. Oh, yeah, Drew Aller is going to be a top 5 pick in the NFL draft. All right. As soon as Drew Aller got hurt, you'll notice Penn State scored like 27 points
that
a game.
They were in that game against Ohio State. We were on air, and they were there for a
the
while.
Over, if you remember, I said, I think they can score on
They're
them.
Moving. Like
their offense is suddenly better with this new kid quarterback. And I like Bo Pavula. He's a great athlete. But he was a very rudimentary passer, as we saw, the Missouri quarterback. This Zollers kid came off the bench, and it was like, oh, boy, it's his first ever snap. He's on the road against Vanderbilt. Kid starts throwing first downs, like, down the field. Like,
led them to a fourth-quarter touchdown drive, which ties
exactly.
The game.
Yep. Throwing the ball, Babano, too.
Yes.
Like, they was like, oh, boy, man, it's 3rd and 8, man. We don't have a choice. We've got to throw the ball. Kid threw a bullet. Bam. And then the coaching staff started to pick up on it. They were like, you know what? Throw the ball again. See what happens. Boom. He's like, the velocity, the reading, like, it wasn't like, oh, he threw into traffic. And every time, like, you know, young quarterbacks, oh, no. Whoa. You hold your breath when they throw it. This kid's poised. Like you said, Babano, son of a coach, poised, knew the offense, dropped back, scrambled the ball a little bit. I liked him. I liked him. Like I said, I think he's a scrappy kid, and I don't have a problem with it. Like, I, as a guy that has money on Missouri over win total and to make the playoffs, their offense has not suffered with Zolar and Babano.
Well, let's not forget this is a two-loss team, and the two losses were a 3-point loss at home to Alabama and a 7-point loss at Vanderbilt in a game their quarterback got injured. So they haven't lost by margin. So I'm with you on this. I'm not going to call for the outright win like you, but I seven. There's still sevens out there with Missouri. I'm with you. I like Missouri.
They're playing themselves back into this. Like, put it this way, they could. They beat A&M. They're right there. They still play Oklahoma. I haven't given up on Missouri to make the playoffs yet, but they can't lose again. Right, they've already got two losses, and they're going to lose again. But
I know A&M destroyed LSU on the road, but let's not forget the week before that, they were life and death at Arkansas and gave up 42 exactly. points to that Razorbacks team and only won by three, 45-42 in a shootout. So, by the way, three straight overs for LSU coming into this game. But this is another thing, too. Both teams off a bye week, so there's no advantage. But I think for Missouri, the bye week is huge because they play Bama, Auburn, exactly. and Vanderbilt. Three straight games, physical football games, wear and tear on the body. They get the bye week, and they get time for Zollers to practice with the first team.
And
offense.
They're back home.
Huge for them.
Yeah. And they're back home, which is a big thing. Like that Auburn game was the first game road game of the year for them. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, they left there. They ran away from home. It didn't go so well. They're coming back. And I think everything should be fine this week. I'm going to call the upset. Plus 220 on the money line. Ian Cameron, Ice Guys. All right, thanks, Babano. Enjoy the Ticat game this week.
All right, guys. Oski Wee Wee. We'll talk to you next week.
Holy mackerel. Eat them raw.
All right, there's Ian Cameron with us. And we'll wrap it up. I said this last week, Cam. I said, you know, the Blue Jays... Mm-hmm. And I upset Blue Jay fans before because I said the Blue Jays are going to lose. But I said I think the Blue Jays are going to lose this series. But the Blue Jays have kind of won. There's no moral victories really in sports with teams when you lose in the championship. Thing with the Blue Jays is they've had a great organization over the last couple of years, right? There's been ups and downs with the Rogers ownership group, but the modern it seems like. Edward, right? It used to be Ted. So Ted's like the oligarch. Ted was like he's the one with the statues and stuff.
Yes.
So you got like Ted Rogers, he's dead. And the son, you know, there's a bunch of sons and stuff, but one of them named Edward has taken over basically the baseball side of things. And they've done a great job. Just point blank. Like I point blank remember a couple of years ago, like 10 years ago or so, I was in the Jays clubhouse and I was talking to people about the Jays and they were like, God, this is like frustrating to play for this company. Like basically the players knew how rich Rogers were. Yeah. Like there was a story years ago. There was, I forget the kid. I don't know. It was Romero. It was some kid on the team. Rogers wanted him to like do a photo shoot and stuff for like the Blue Jays, like calendar and magazine.
Oh yeah. That's when he had to pay for his own suits and stuff like that. It's like, what the hell is going on?
So he showed up. Yeah. He showed up and he basically was just dressed like he normally does. And they basically bitched at him and said, oh, you know, you don't look professional. You got to get a suit. So he went out and he bought a suit just for this stupid like thing, you know, their photo shoot. And Batista was like fuming. He said, you know, this is the type of crap that they do to you here when they're rich instead of just giving you a suit or letting you wear like it. There was like it was almost like the Expos that was owned by Major League Baseball. Like the Expos, it got to the point where they stopped giving like vitamins to players. Like they'll be like, you know, vitamin A, vitamin B. They'll be like bowls of vitamins in the clubhouse and stuff. Like so like. The Expos didn't have that. Like the Major League Baseball, like didn't want to buy the Expos bubble gum for the dugout, stuff like that. It's like buy your own gum, right? We're not supplying this for you. We're not spending an extra cent. It's like the movie Moneyball with the soda, right? Where that's true, right? That stuff happens on some of these poor teams. Where in the movie Moneyball, Dave Justice tries to get a Pepsi out of the machine in the clubhouse, and it's a dollar. And he's like, what the hell is this? Like, most of the machines are free. You just punch them, right? Like, so my point is the Blue Jays had some dark years where, like, they would argue with players over vitamins and, like, stupid stuff. They didn't, you know, they spent money but it was really begrudgingly, right? It was, they were very anti, you know, it was a battle to get money out of the Rogers family on the Jays. Then, you know, they've sort of gone back and forth with it. They've spent money, and then, like, they spent a lot of money on the team during the Donaldson era there, and they made a lot of money. And that's what sort of opened their eyes. That they were like, you know, we could charge more for our cable. We could charge more for this. We'll sell a hell of a lot of merchandise. You see in the city of Toronto when things are going well for the Blue Jays, how popular they are and how much money, like literally money they can make. So this time around now, it was like the all-time smash success for them, right? Like they probably made $1 billion, guys, mm-hmm. like over the last month, like literally. So they made so much money. But thing is, this went under Ed Rogers, dude, they put in like $300 million into their spring training facility. Like teams don't do that. Like teams are going to say, man, we're only there for like a month, guys. We're not spending $300 million on this. Like, no, spend $80 million. Put a little tin thing up. Like, no, we're not doing that. Like Blue Jays went first class. Like basically like the Blue Jays spring training stadium, first class. Clubhouse, first class. Practice facility, first class. Buffalo Stadium, AAA. Yeah, you know what? Screw them. They're lucky to have our team. No. Let's put money into the stadium there. First class. Like, they're throwing money everywhere. And they threw it at players. They tried to get Ohtani. They tried to get Soto. Like, they threw it at, like, Sasaki. Sasaki said, I came really close to signing with the Blue Jays. So I'm saying there's no moral victories, but now everybody knows what the guys on the Jays know now, right around baseball. That, yeah, this is a first-class organization, fan base second to none. The Jays are the biggest team in baseball. Like, no team has as many fans as the Jays do due to the fact that they have a country behind them, right? I mean, even the Dodgers, like, you know, not everybody in L.A. is a Dodger fan even. Most of them are, but, like, not everybody is.
Right, so Scherzer said, Gabe, he fell in love with the city. You saw what happened. Bieber says, I'm not going anywhere. He signs that $60 million option. This is the type of team before where guys would be gone. Now people are going to come in. I'm with you. This is going to be a new generation of success, I think, for a very long time. I love, well, I they love already where things had, are heading.
Yeah, they already had, like, players would sign with them already, mm-hmm. right? Gossman was a free agent. Springer was a free agent. Santander was a free agent. So there was already sort of a public, there was already a positive feeling with the Major League Baseball PA about the Jays. Like, yeah, they'll pay you. It's cool. It's a cool city. The thing is, too, with Toronto, a lot of players like the fact that they don't have to deal with traffic. And there's a ton of traffic in Toronto. But if you're a Toronto Blue Jay player, most of them live, like, right basically across the street from the stadium. There's a bunch of, like, luxury condominiums around the stadium. Anybody that was paying attention, you guys saw Vlad Guerrero always walking in through a tunnel. He was never even outside, guys. Like, Vlad leaves his place, walks through the tunnels underground. Like, the Raptor players all live in Maple Leaf Square, and they built, like, a little tunnel system that you can get from these condos into the arenas and the stadium. So, basically, you can avoid the fans too, right? So, you know, if you're a star and stuff, it's like, hey, dude, we got an underground tunnel here that you can come through. So players really like it, right? Like, a lot of players don't like the one thing with the Dodgers I talked about, like with Trey Turner. He didn't like the traffic. He basically said, I can't sit in traffic for 4 hours a day every day. Like, I just can't deal with it. Like, it's not worth it to play for the Dodgers. He didn't like it. And so, as Camp stated, Max Scherzer's known as a hard ass, and Max Scherzer's been on a lot of teams over his career. And his wife posted a post yesterday on Instagram. When Max signed with Toronto, I had a feeling we would enjoy the experience. Never could I imagine how special the season would turn out to be. Out of 18 seasons in Major League Baseball, none has had an impact on our lives like this one. Toronto, our family fell in love with you. Your beauty, your culture, your people. Playing for an entire country is truly special. Normally, at the end of a season, regardless of the outcome, you're ready to go home and recharge. Never have I seen a team full of players and their families that did not want the season to end and just wish they could play for many more weeks just to spend more time together. Man. I feel incredibly blessed to to still live this beautiful baseball life and to watch Max live out his dream. I'm devastated the season is over. Proud of what this team accomplished. Grateful for the experience and the lifelong friends that came from it. Dude. I don't think Max Scherzer even said goodbye to anybody when he left the Dodgers. Like,
you're right.
That's, like, there was no love fest, and we were like, see you later, Max. And he was like, see you later. It was bye, like, there was none of this. Like I said, Max Scherzer is known as being one of the more difficult, tougher guys in Major League Baseball. Doesn't like it anywhere. Guys on in a different team every 2 years. You've got Bieber. Bieber could have opted for free agency. Well, he could have said, oh, I'm going to stay. And you know what I mean? But he stayed into his deal. Like, he took less money, essentially. Like, Bieber could have probably gotten, I don't know, you know, 23, 21, 25 type thing. Let's say 25. Like, Walker Buehler got 21. So, and Bieber is better than Buehler is now at this point. So, like, Bieber could have hit the market and said, all right, Toronto, if you want to keep me, you got to give me like $25 million because 16 really is not enough. Bieber forfeited his free agency. Bieber said point blank, like right away. He just said like 2 days ago. He said, oh, yeah, I'm not leaving. He said, I'm not leaving this team. And he said, I opt in. He told him right away, I opt in. $16 million you owe me. I'll pitch for you for $16 million. Could have easily gotten more elsewhere. Could have easily tried to shake the Jays down. It goes to show that he didn't even want to shake the Jays down. You know what I mean, Cam? He's like, no. I don't even want to cause any drama. Just tell them I'm opting in. Like, I'm in.
It's awesome.
And he said, they believed in me to bring me in here. I'm not. I signed a deal with $16 million. I don't need more. Pretty wild. Like, players are now taking less money now.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole thing. And nobody takes less money, but that's the whole thing. It was magical, Gabe, as you see. And that's a good point by Bieber. You know, he's a guy coming off Tommy John injuries, and the Jays took a chance. It turned out to be an amazing move by the Toronto Blue Jays, and now he's signing for 16. I'm really looking forward to what happens in the future, but that's exactly what you said. Special team, special time. And yeah, this guy's not screwing around. He's like, oh, just give me the money. I'm pitching for the Jays.
There's one guy that the Jays are going to have to take care of. That's another thing, too, though. They're going to have to pay people now.
I know.
Like, you're going to have to. Like, Ernie Clement is one I've noticed a lot. He was in tears after Ernie Clement and about, like, the whole thing and about, like, this is the, you know, I never loved anything as much as this team. And they were like, well, next year. He kept on going back to, like, well, I hope. We'll see. I hope. We'll see. And I think that translation was, I just set a record for most hits in the Major League Baseball postseason. So,
hey, me.
I hope that I'm back. I hope that they see that, like, you know, he's up for arbitration. So just don't make it ugly. Pay him. Like, listen, man, Rogers, I just boasted about you guys making like $1 billion here. You're now going to have to give it out a little bit. You're going to have to pay Bichette. You're going to have to pay Clement. You're going to have to pay. Go after, try to get Tarek Skubal, go after and try to get, like, aces. If I was the Blue Jays, that's all I would go. Like, the Blue Jays don't even need new bats. I would just be all pitching if I was the Jays. Same with the Dodgers. From the Dodgers, although there's talk the Dodgers might just, like, bring in Kyle Tucker now, too. I'm not sure they will, but they might. I could see that they might. All right, so we'll wrap it up. Cam, any golf picks for us on the way out?
Yeah, Gabe, it's actually the Worldwide Technology Championship, so it's like kind of some big players are there. I'm going to take a shot. I'll talk to you and Wetzel tonight on In-Game Live on the grid, but Max Gracerman has finished second and fourth in his last two events. His kid from Duke is knocking on the door 25-1. Garrett Higgo's been great for me, especially in the top 5-10, top 10 markets. He's 28-1. Steven Yeager is finally coming around. He's 65-1. Top 10, Gabe, one of your favorite guys, Ben Griffin. Great price at +130 for a guy that is a top 10 machine. Top 20, Rico Hoey. We all know about the great golfer from the Philippines, +105 for a top 20. And Eric Cole, who's played well in this event before. I'll take him to win at 90-1, but I prefer the top 20 at +210. And the Abu Dhabi Classic, it's now the DP World Tour's playoffs. Ty Hatton, 11-1. Rory McIlroy, the favorite. They're playing in Abu Dhabi this week, too. So golf is back this week with two pretty good events.
Yeah, some big-time players.
Yeah,
playing on the DP. tour, man. It's funny, man. Rory, like, people criticize Rory for picking his spots on the PGA Tour, but you know what? You got to give him credit that he shows love to the European market.
He does.
Right? On the DP Tour, he plays in Europe. He'll play in the Middle East for money, obviously, but, like, you know, so that's – I give credit for Rory. Like, Rory does grow the game of golf.
He does.
Like Rory does grow the game of golf by his passion for it, but he actually plays in different places, different countries. He's pretty accessible for fans, for a big star. He'll act like a bitch when he loses, but he does more for the game than a lot of people. Like, sometimes I thought, like, at times, I'm like, dude, like, who made you the golf police and this whole thing? But, like, he does have a passion for the sport that you see some others.
Gabe, he's won six times. The race to Dubai is the FedEx Cup. He's won that six times. That's all you need to know. That's pretty impressive. That's wild.
Yeah, he's a competitor.
Yep.
All right. Thanks to Ian Cameron, Babano, for stepping up and in earlier. Tomorrow I'm going to get into some MLS playoffs. The MLS playoffs are getting real.
NFL right too, now. Gabe. We could talk about some of the moves. I am so happy with the Seahawks move with Shaheed. Like, he's the perfect slot receiver for this team too, and a couple big moves. I am thrilled. That little move was great for Seattle. I'm actually – that's one of the guys I wanted, and they got him. Very happy.
Yeah, I thought that Jacoby Myers – we talked about it earlier in the week. I thought Jacoby Myers would be a nice fit for Seattle, but he went to Jacksonville, but it was nice that they recognized their need. That if you're Seattle, everything is going well. What are we missing? Yeah, our wide receivers are okay on paper, but injuries happen. You can never have too much depth, so I did like the move by the Seattle Seahawks as well. All right, we'll catch you on the grid. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.